and tenants trust Authority Property Management at 2663 Victor Avenue. They manage a variety of properties, including single-family homes, apartments, condos, townhouses, multifamily properties, and commercial properties. Authority Property Management offers full-time management, including finding and screening tenants, rent collection, financial reporting, and final walkthrough home inspections when they move out. Contact Authority Property Management today at 530-410-6085 and check out their website at authoritypm.com.
At Greg's Pump and Well Service, we believe integrity is the cornerstone of everything we do. This month, we proudly salute our armed forces and first responders, those who embody true service, dedication, and integrity. When you choose us for your pump and well needs, you're choosing a company that shares those same values. Thank you for your service. Let us serve you with pride. 530-282-5395. Call us at 530-282-5395, license 109-0355.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
There are subcultures that produce lots of new words, and some of them are more spontaneously created. Journalists and other public writers, you know, notoriously, gangsters and drug addicts have been among the more creative people linguistically.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Dr. Patricia Bart, Associate Professor of English here at Hillsdale College. We continue later on in today's program, diving into the history of the English language with Dr. Bart. First, we're joined by Congressman Mike Waltz. He represents Florida's 6th Congressional District, the first Green Beret in Congress, former White House and Pentagon special advisor, and his new book is Hard Truths, Think and Lead Like a Green Beret. Congressman, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, great to be with you, and always appreciate all the great work that Hillsdale does.
I appreciate that. I want to begin by asking about the definition of a Green Beret. People know the phrase, perhaps, but don't know what makes them unique and special. What is a Green Beret?
Yeah, it's one of the reasons I wrote the book. I get asked all the time, you know, by people who understand that we're an elite force, U.S. Army Special Forces. But what's the difference in a Green Beret, a U.S. Navy SEAL, a U.S. Army Ranger? You know, what do they do? How do they think? How do they operate that's differently? And I think the easiest way to explain it is that the SEALs and the Rangers are the best of the world at finding bad guys anywhere in the world, going in the middle of the night, as they did with Osama bin Laden in that raid in 2011, putting two bullets on the forehead, and getting out and taking care of our nation's bad guys. They can run, but they can't hide forever. Green Berets are somewhat different in that we can do those types of raids, absolutely, but we tend to be older. We operate in smaller teams, sometimes as small as three or four, and we learn multiple languages. We specialize in various parts of the world. We embed with locals. Often we have to blend in and specialize in local cultures. And so you'll take just a few of us, you know, maybe six, eight, a dozen, and put us with a tribe, with a militia, with we specialize in guerrilla warfare, insurgency and counterinsurgency, and we'll train and operate by, with, and through 1,000 up to 10,000 locals to kind of take care of our nation's business for us. And we tend to stay much longer, be embedded in a way that is kind of much more fulsome. And again, we have the operational term kind of by, with, and through. We would rather find our friends and have them take care of our enemies for us. And so it is a unique mindset that we have to have. And now as a member of Congress, I say in the book, if I can build coalitions of militias or tribes or warlords in Africa, Afghanistan, then I can handle the tribes in the swamp. although sometimes they're a little bit tougher than the ones overseas.
Congressman Mike Waltz is with us. His new book, Hard Truths, Think and Lead Like a Green Beret. And you have all these attributes, different chapters, attributes that you learned and that you continue to exemplify from your career as a Green Beret. We'll walk through a few of those. Restraint is the very first attribute, and there are many examples of restraint you had to show, a story about the, making the decision about whether or not to throw sniper fire onto what looked to be like a 12-year-old boy during your service. I was curious about the difference between the kind of restraint and the examples that you show in Hard Truths. And we hear restraint in a different way today with regards to Israel and people on the left saying Israel must show restraint against Hezbollah. They must show restraint against Hamas. What's the difference between the restraint that you talk about in Hard Truths and the type of restraint that is meant by the left and those who would call for Israel to essentially stand down at this time?
Well, I think it's how you apply it, both tactically and strategically. What I talk about in the book that you mentioned, a 10-year-old little boy, we saw through our sniper scope every time he picked up his cell phone and binoculars, another mortar round came in on our position. And after watching that for a few minutes and several rounds came in, my sniper asked for permission to kill the little boy. This is happening again, you know, in kind of the blink of an eye. I'm the father. I thought about my little girl at the time that was the same age. I told him to fire a warning shot and rather than kill him, he did. The little boy ran into his village. We followed him in. It turned out the Taliban had been in the village that morning, lined up all the families and said, give your oldest son to go fight the Americans or else. One family refused and they hung their little boy. So was restraint in that moment the right call? I think so. Would I be saying that if I were saying that to the parents of one of my Green Berets that little boy had killed? I don't know. But I go through moments in history, to your point. You know, H.W. Bush, Bush Sr. in the first Gulf War showed restraint in that we only went in Kuwait. We liberated Kuwait. Many wanted him to go all the way to Baghdad to take out Saddam. He showed restraint, and I think that was the right call. I think Grant showing restraint on Lee was the right call at the time. And to your point with Iran, if you go back to the Trump administration, remember they attacked our shipping.
Mm-hmm.
Trump didn't hit back. They attacked Saudi oil fields. They hit back. It wasn't until they crossed the red line of killing an American and storming our embassy that Trump then took out Soleimani, their field general. Sometimes you have to punch the bully in the mouth. You have to escalate to de-escalate, and that not only restored stability in the region. We were eventually signing peace accords with the Abraham Accords on the White House lawn. That's very different than what's happening now with the Biden administration. They're not showing restraint. They are showing concession after concession after concession. They're operating through a lens of appeasement. To take the schoolyard bully analogy, they're the kids that just said, if I give a little more lunch money, maybe I throw in my ham sandwich too, that the bully will be nice. And we know what happens in that environment. There is a difference in restraint and appeasement. What we're seeing out of this administration is appeasement and weakness, and the bully Iran taking full advantage of it.
Discipline. There's a story in Hard Truths by Congressman Mike Waltz about saving Skittles in the midst of Green Beret training. And we actually learned a few times in the book how close you came to not being a Green Beret, how close you perhaps came to being kicked out of that training. But this particular lesson was about that discipline not just being for you, but also being for the benefit of others. Is that a difficult lesson to learn?
Well, I certainly learned it somewhat the hard way in that, you know, in Ranger training, starvation and sleep deprivation is part of what you go through. Can you still lead and conduct a mission to standard and all of that? And in one case, we had completely run out of food. We missed our resupply. But I had saved these little, they're like the size that kind of you give during Halloween, these
sure.
little travel-sized pockets.
Mm-hmm.
I had saved it. Man, every time I popped one of those in my mouth, it was like this explosion of energy, and I'll never look at seeing my buddies staring at me, I mean, salivating, and I thought, my initial thought was, you know what, I have the discipline to save a little bit of food. You didn't, buddy. you know, sucks to be you, I did the right thing. And my instructor afterwards, you get evaluated by your peers, and they hit me for it. I didn't think that was fair. I had discipline, they didn't. You know what he said to me? He said, what would Jesus have done? You comport yourself to be a Christian. What would he have done in that situation? This was a sergeant, a ranger sergeant, my evaluator, and I'll never forget it. I said, you know what, Sergeant? He would have given his whole pack. That having discipline as a leader doesn't mean you just take care of yourself. You have the discipline to take care of others, even when they are weak. And so it was just a powerful lesson that, you know, how you need to live your faith and live your values, even in the toughest of circumstances.
That's Congressman Mike Waltz, U.S. Army Special Forces, retired. His new book, Hard Truths, Think and Lead Like a Green Beret. We continue our conversation in just a few moments. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, this is Tanessa Audette, Mayor of Reading. The North State is our home, unique with so much to offer. We are fortunate to have representatives who actually show up, listen to us, and are always ready to fight back, like Congressman Doug LaMalfa. Whether it's a family farmer or small business owner fighting Washington bureaucrats, a wildfire victim struggling to recover and start over, or a local veteran looking to receive the benefits promised and earned, Congressman Doug LaMalfa is always there to take it on and get things done. Let's keep him working for us. This is Tanessa Audette. Thanks for listening.
This is Doug LaMalfa. Serving as your representative isn't about politics. It's about getting results. My mission is to protect our jobs, our water, our Constitution, and our way of life. This is Doug LaMalfa, and I approve this message, paid for by the Doug LaMalfa Committee.
Hey, this is Carl Lindebach. Looking for a staycay or a getaway close to home? Well, the best houseboat rentals are happening right now in September and October at Holiday Harbor.
And the off-season rates at Holiday Harbor are amazing deals. And the lake is a perfect 78 degrees. For more information, go to LakeShasta.com or call 530-238-2383.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, and this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Gran Habanos Corojo No. 5 with the unusual Shaggy Foot. Offering two distinct experiences, Corojo No. 5 comes from Honduras with Nicaraguan, Mexican, and Costa Rican tobaccos, finished off with a spicy Nicaraguan Corojo wrapper leaf for a heavy and rich smoke. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Join Tolkien's radio show every Sunday at 2 p.m. on 96.5 FM and AM 1460 as host Christy Matthews and Linda Kent explore the exciting world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. Learn how Bitcoin is revolutionizing finance and grasp sound money principles. Hear new perspectives on achieving financial freedom beyond broken institutions. The future of money is here. Empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to Tolkien's radio show with Linda and Christy this Sunday at 2 p.m. on KCNR. Big and exciting changes are underway.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. 27 years ago, my wife Judy and I started Shasta Gas with the help and under the direction of the Lord Jesus Christ. In fact, we believe He is the owner and we are simply the managers. Through the years, we have received many offers from major national corporations to buy Shasta Gas. But our commitment has always been to be and remain locally owned and family operated. Our daughter Karen Wehunt and her husband Jason now manage the daily operations of Shasta Gas and Shasta Gas at Tanks, a new business we started a few years ago. We now have the third generation of family members working in the business. Sunshine Stevens, our granddaughter, and her husband Adam, and our grandson Jason. Our commitment and motto are still the same. Our customers are warm friends. To support locally owned family operated business, please call Shasta Gas Propane at 530-365-3793. That's 530-365-3793.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We've been talking with Congressman Mike Waltz of Florida, U.S. Army Special Forces retired. His brand new book is Hard Truths, Think and Lead Like a Green Beret. Congressman,
we can't get to all of these attributes. I commend readers to read the chapter on loyalty, which takes us through the Bergdahl story. Very affecting. I wanted to ask about resilience. There are just incredible stories up and down in Hard Truths. We learn about Ken Dwyer in this resilience chapter and others who have lost limbs, eyes, a foot. Congressman, what possesses someone who has had that experience to want to return and continue to serve?
You know, it's a little bit difficult to talk about in some ways, in that, you know, we as a nation have an obligation to take care of our wounded warriors. We haven't always done a good job. Now we've done a much better job over the years, but I talk about these Green Berets of mine. One of them, Andre Murnane, who lost his foot, and the system is now so conditioned to, hey, give you an honorable discharge, give you a disability payment, kind of take care of you. They didn't know what to do with him because he said, I don't want any of that. I don't want any of it. I just want to get back to my team. And 9 months after having his foot taken off, with a prosthetic, he was the first to go back into airborne operations. And I'll never forget us both jumping together and him landing on that prosthetic foot. You hit pretty hard. He just wanted to get back to serve again with his buddies. And that servant's heart, cannot be stopped. He literally probably turned down what would amount to millions over a lifetime in disability payments to get back with his special forces team. I don't know what, at the end of the day, what drives people, but I know it's there. I know it's there in certain individuals to want to serve that badly, to be with their buddies, to take care of those that are left and right and defend this great nation. I talk about Ken Dwyer, who's now a colonel still in the Green Berets, that lost an eye, an arm, and a leg in a firefight. And I, you know, please read his story because, but for his medic, who he gave his final instruction before he passed out, don't let him take my other arm. And the medic literally jumped in the way of the Army surgeon who was about to take his other arm off as well in the operating room. I mean, these stories of heroism are what Americans need to hear and what we need to celebrate. And, you know, the old adage, my heroes wear camouflage, not capes or, you know, I don't know, Adidas or Nike shoes.
Congressman Mike Waltz, retired U.S. Army Special Forces. His book, Hard Truths, Think and Lead Like a Green Beret. The chapter on boldness. I don't know if you know the author or the writer, John Gabriel, but he has this discussion about boldness and controversy. When something on the left is proposed, it's always described as bold in the media. When something on the right is proposed, it's always described as controversial, even though something bold is by definition controversial, right? You have examples in the book, Governor Ron DeSantis and his boldness in leadership in COVID that was successful. But I think back to, say, like President George W. Bush and his boldness in proposing that Social Security be privatized, and he spent a lot of political capital. It was a bold idea. It was also controversial, and it did not succeed. How can leaders continue to be bold in the face of both, A, controversy, and B, occasional failure?
You very much have to have a moral compass, a very clear idea of kind of what that North Star is. I firmly believe as a Christian that's underscored by faith. But I not only talk about those ideas, I talk about, you know, George Washington, who was completely on his back foot, his army starving. The Congress wasn't giving him the support that he needs. And what does he do? He goes on offense. at Princeton, and has the bold Christmas Day attack that takes out the British and then their German mercenaries, the Hessians, and really saves the Continental Army. Or even in modern day, President Trump instinctively understood that you couldn't be first in the world. We can't continue to be a global leader, number one in the world, if you're number two in space. And he saw, was briefed on what the Russians and what the Chinese are doing in space, how dependent our economy is on what's up there. And he said, well, we've got to create a space force to defend it. You remember all the jokes, making fun of him. You know what, in hindsight, how right he was. Well, his Air Force secretary at the time was dragging her feet. She had kind of, we're listening to the generals rather than the president who put her there. He fired her by tweet. You know what? Kind of a mean thing to do, kind of a jerk thing to do, people were saying at the time. But the Pentagon got the message. The generals were in my office the next day to help me pass the legislation to create the Space Force. And so that was a bold move. Everybody in the bureaucracy and the media and everybody else were mocking it and making fun of it. But now we see with what Elon Musk is doing, what commercial space is doing, Starlink and all of these newest systems and this new economy. And I think it just takes people that say, batten down the hatches. we are going to do what I know to be right and move forward.
The chapter on speaking truth to power, you write, the thing about speaking truth to power is once you start, it inspires others. And there are stories in the book about some tense meetings with Donald Rumsfeld, a meeting with superiors in which you tell the truth about the status of the Afghan army, and others then contribute their thoughts and ideas as well. When is that time when a leader must speak, even if it is out of turn or perhaps unacceptable on a by-the-rule basis?
Well, I don't know that you have to be prepared for it, I think, when that moment hits, right? And you never quite know when that moment is going to be. I also tell the story of the chief of staff of the Army, George C. Marshall, who was dealing with a very difficult, mercurial, sometimes hot-tempered president in Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who had fired a number of people in his cabinet. Sounds a little bit analogous to modern day as well. And FDR was determined. He had made a decision. He slapped his desk. He was going to put in place budget cuts for the Defense Department, for the War Department at the time. This is like 1938, 1939. George C. Marshall saw what was happening with Germany, saw what was happening with Japan, and he took that moment in the Oval Office to challenge the president. Really kind of took everybody by surprise, and he walked out of the office thinking, okay, I'm waiting on the pink slips. The president invited him back the next day and gave him 10 minutes to make his case. He did. And not only did the president reverse course, he asked Congress for a budget increase. I think that saved the world in the precipice of World War II.
Congressman Mike Waltz, representing the 6th District in Florida, retired U.S. Army Special Forces and author of the new book, Hard Truths, Think and Lead Like a Green Beret. Congressman, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hey, thank you. And just by the way, no royalties or anything to me personally. It's all going to charity, to the Matthew Pacino Foundation, one of the Green Berets I lost, and other veterans charities. So I just really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about it.
Up next, we're joined once again by Dr. Patricia Bart from Hillsdale's English Department as we continue our journey through the history of the English language. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Ad paid for by Excellence in Education, not authorized by a candidate or a committee controlled by a candidate.
Standing up for what's right takes grit, determination, and unwavering commitment. That's why Tanessa Audette is running for state assembly, and why she's earned the trust of conservative leaders across California. A lifelong conservative, Tanessa is the only Republican endorsed by the California Republican Party and the California Rifle and Pistol Association. A small business owner and mayor, Tanessa is a proven fighter who knows how to take on radical Governor Gavin Newsom and the liberal Sacramento politicians. Tanessa Audette will stand up for North State values. That's why she's earned the endorsements of Republican Congressman Doug LaMalfa and Tom McClintock. She's a fighter for taxpayers, too, and the only candidate officially endorsed by the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association. In this election, the only conservative Republican choice for state assembly is Tanessa Audette. She'll fight for us, and she'll win.
Open now through December 31st at Turtle Bay Museum. Alphonse Mucha, Master of Art Nouveau. Step back to the turn of the 20th century and learn about the many forms of Art Nouveau. Explore the broad range of works by Czechoslovakian artist Alphonse Mucha and immerse yourself in timeless art. Presented by the J&D Jaramonti Family Fund. Alphonse Mucha, Master of Art Nouveau. Open now at Turtle Bay. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Hello, Northern California. This is Rollin with the Flag Center. With fire season clearly upon us, we're inviting you to join us in celebrating all police, firefighters, and first responders who keep us safe day and night through thick and thin. We salute you. The Flag Center keeps plenty of thin blue line and thin red line flags in stock. To get yours, stop by the Flag Center at 2124 Hilltop Drive or on the web at theflagcenter.com. Flags, flagpoles, and accessories since 1980.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
The Ramsey Show.
When you're walking around with a little picket in your hand and you're saying, I demand $22 to work at McDonald's, then you don't get to bitch about inflation.
Yeah.
Because you caused it.
It's The Ramsey Show, where we talk about your life and your money. Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
Hello there, this is Kevin Cry. Every other Sunday, I will be on KCNR, your talk radio, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. I will be discussing the issues that matter to you most. You'll be able to call in directly, ask questions, and have a dialogue open and free every other Sunday right here on KCNR, your talk radio.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We continue our investigation into the history of the English language with Dr. Patricia Bart, Associate Professor of English here at Hillsdale College. Our first part was a couple of weeks ago. You can find the archive at podcast.hillsdale.edu. When we left off, we were talking with Dr. Bart about how new words developed in the English language. Dr. Bart, let's pick it up there. How do new words evolve and emerge in the English language?
There are subcultures that produce lots of new words, and some of them are more spontaneously created. Journalists and other public writers, okay, not academic writers, heaven help us, but journalists and other public writers that are more popularly distributed, right? School children and teenagers, and now especially with social media,
yes,
even more so. Emigres and expatriates in contact with local people pick up words, bring them back. social media users, as we say, and you know, notoriously, gangsters and drug addicts have been among the more creative people linguistically as well, because you know they may have a need or a desire to exert social pressure mm-hmm. or social influence, and then on the flip side of that, they may have a desire to speak secretly or right so. Words like beatnik have come into the language this way, under the influence apparently of Sputnik, but then of course Nick also, like refuse Nick, there were words like that in the 50s being generated because of the Cold War, having those Nicks at the end. You've got the use of bad in the 1980s and the use of sick. And I think it started in the 2000s. This is the first time I ever heard it. And I'm like, this is not sick. It's good. What are you talking about? And I'm like, oh my gosh, I just officially got old, you know? So, the cascade of au revoir, sayonara, and hasta la vista, mm-hmm. right? I mean, and in English, we don't mean the same thing by them as they are meant in their native language. Because in their native language, they're not foreign.
Right.
So that foreignness is part of the meaning of the term. Now there are institutional subcultures as well that actually produce huge swaths of vocabulary in the language. But not popularly.
How do terms develop into categories of common tongue and academic language?
So academics in various disciplines, I have myself invented three words that I had to use. I simply had to invent them for a work that I was writing. I just didn't want to repeat verbose explanations each time, right? So I used a more succinct word. But then I think of physicians, you know, the careful naming mm-hmm. of diseases and processes of disease, the etiology and things like that, you know, the prognosis, right? You get all these Greek words and Latin words, and it's like, it's not because they want to hide the knowledge of their discipline from other people. It's that, in a pan-European and now in a global situation, they want to refer specifically to mm-hmm. very particular things, right? So there is that need for the word. Natural scientists, lawyers, heaven help us, right? You got habeas corpus and all those mispronounced Latin words, right? The military, air traffic controllers, general contractors, you know, make contractor grade. What the heck? Anyway, so they produce terms institutionally in a very concerted way, right, for the purpose of sort of consolidating certain precise meanings, mm-hmm. right, amongst one another. And then, of course, there are 100% artificial languages from the bottom to the top, right? You got computer languages so that you can sure. sort of talk to machines or now make them talk back to you in your own language, right? So we know that's going on. But we've also got things like Elvish and Klingon. We've got Esperanto and Interlingua. We've got words, you know, invented by a poet like Brillig or Frabjus, which aren't really in the English language, although I use Frabjus quite a bit. You know, but I mean the opposite. I don't mean it's fabulous. I mean it's like not fabulous, right? But the word chortle comes from that poem, and that one stuck, right? So we have kinds of institutional creation of language as well.
Talking with Dr. Pat Bart from Hillsdale's English Department about the history of the English language. Dr. Bart, how do we name things?
So naming a thing grants us, or it implies that it grants us, a certain power over it, whether that's real or imagined. Because the thing, in any case, if you name it, it becomes manipulable in your thinking mm-hmm. and in your speaking and in your influence over other people, right? So we also have words such as the ineffable name of God that Jews and pious Christians will not utter.
Mm-hmm.
The word Jehovah comes from that. It's a misreading the Jews actually put the vowel points of the word Adonai onto his ineffable name so that you wouldn't accidentally read it aloud. It was never meant to be read as Jehovah, right? It just was not, okay? And, of course, Bible translators, to this day, if you open your Bible, you might actually never have noticed it. But the word Lord is written in all caps, mm-hmm. but you don't notice it's in all caps because the L is a bigger capital than the O-R-D, and that's covering up the ineffable name. So out of respect for not manipulating that name, right, one doesn't utter it. So that gives you a full range mm-hmm. of the nature of naming things, I think.
Talking with Dr. Pat Bart about the history of the English language. Now, how does the history of the English language perhaps differ from the history of other languages?
Okay, so the history of the English language differs in the sense that the history of the people who speak it differs from that of other people, although it might parallel that of some further people, right? An illustration might be Latin. I often use this illustration with my students. Latin kind of is a centripetal language. It moved out from the small area of Rome, and as they conquered other peoples, those peoples picked it up.
Mm-hmm.
But originally it was a pretty unified language amongst the Roman people, right? And of course today we have all the Romance languages come from it. English is actually a centripetal language. What do I mean by that? It's not a technical term. What I mean by that is it was sort of a basket of peoples all jostling around amongst with each other who were speaking different dialects that were all basically Germanic dialects of some kind, but, you know, kind of distinct.
Mm-hmm.
And these people mixed with one another in such a way that it produced English. Okay, it wasn't that the Saxons moved to England and speaking the Saxon dialect only, then that dialect developed in England as English. No, that's not how it happened. Saxons, Jutes, Frisians, Angles, all speaking different dialects, mutually intelligible, but different dialects, you know, got together in the island, in the part of the island of Britain that's now England, mostly, and in that sort of jostling amongst one another, layered with Scandinavian influences, so that's a whole other Germanic branch from what German and English are in. It's North Germanic, right? So all of that jostling is what created English, mm-hmm. which then went out the way Latin did and began to be spoken by people who perhaps had no contact even with the Germanic language, right? And so brought their own kind of flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
So Jamaica, for example.
Sure.
With all those lovely African, perfectly rounded vowels, right? You know, that we don't ever have in English. So pure vowel.
Dr. Pat Bart, hold on one moment. We'll continue our conversation in just a second as we continue our journey through the history of the English language. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
I'm Erin Reznor. I'm running for the 2-year Reading City Council seat. Reading isn't just where I live. It's who I am. It's where I grew up, built a business, and started a family. Every face reminds me why I'm so committed to this community. I believe in small town traditions, but also in progress, creating opportunities for all of us. When I look at my kids, I'm reminded of the legacy we're building for every family in Reading. I want a city where safety is a priority, small businesses thrive, and our values stay strong. I'm running because I believe in a Reading that lifts everyone up, where our local businesses are the heartbeat of our economy, and where the next generation has every reason to stay, build, and dream. My vision is for the Reading we'll pass down to our children, a legacy we can all be proud of. I'm Erin Reznor, and I'm ready to keep fighting for Reading, for you, for all of us.
Paid for by Erin Reznor for City Council 2024.
At Cornerstone Community Bank, you're more than just a customer. You're our friends, neighbors, the local businesses where we shop, and the restaurants where we dine. Your success strengthens our community. Come meet our amazing teams in Reading, Red Bluff, and our newest location in Anderson, and find out why we are more than banking. Cornerstone Community Bank, member FDIC and equal housing lender.
Jazz Big Band Ensemble and Jazz Combo will be holding their fall concert on November 1st at 7:30 p.m. at the Shasta College Theater. The performance will be directed by Zach Gifford. $7 general admission, $5 seniors and students, $10 at the door. For more information, please visit shastacollege.edu/arts-events or call the theater box office at 530-242-7573.
Join us as we celebrate a milestone in American history, the 249th birthday of the United States Marine Corps. Mark your calendars for November 10th at the Wind River Event Center, where everyone is invited to honor the Marines in style. The celebration kicks off with a march to colors featuring the Jefferson Pipes and Drums as we pay tribute to our oldest and youngest Marines. This unforgettable evening includes a delicious dinner, birthday cake, and dancing. Tickets are just $45, and they're going fast, so secure yours. Visit ShastaMarines.com. That's ShastaMarines.com. Don't miss out on this special event. Tickets are just $45, and they're going fast, so secure yours. Visit ShastaMarines.com. Again, that's ShastaMarines.com. Don't miss out on this special event. We can't wait to celebrate with you on November 10th at the Wind River Event Center. See you there.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram, continuing our conversation with Dr. Patricia Bart from Hillsdale's English Department as we take our trip through the history of the English language. Dr. Bart,
does language constitute the way we think, or is it the other way around?
Yes. Okay, so I had my joke. All right, but joking aside, I think you're referring to the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis, maybe, that actually says that language very strongly influences our thought, but it tends, when people state it over and over again, to get more and more extreme until it's like language constitutes our thought, mm-hmm. right? And so you have Frederick Jameson, for example, in 1972, writes The Prison House of Language, right? All of this goes back to Ferdinand de Saussure's concept of language as a system of signs that are disconnected from the world of the body, the earth, the cosmos. The signifier, that's the sign, right? So if I say bottle or in English, or I say fiasco in Italian or whatever, flasche in German, it signifies that object. But so Saussure studied language very systematically as a sort of system of signs, not really interested in what the signs might have connected to, mm-hmm. right? So the signifier becomes disjunctive from the signified. He studied Indo-European. So, yeah, okay, so he's looking at all these Indo-European languages. They relate to one another, but Indo-European itself is not attested. That means we don't have any remaining written documents in it. So we have to kind of project back theoretically. And so you can see how a lot of his study would become very abstract very quickly. And it's more a relationship, almost like a game of sounds and sound shifts, than it is anything about a real spoken language. So bottom line, I would say, if we're imprisoned by our language, then we would not be able to know it. Mm-hmm. Now think about that for a minute. Okay, so how do we discover that, wow, that word that word Gemütlichkeit, you know, famous instance in German, it's just impossible to translate. Well, how do you notice that if you're in the prison house of your language? I mean, you can't notice things like that. And of course, oh, it's intranslatable. And then people start to translate it and they explain what it means, you know, and then everybody's like, oh yeah, okay, that's, yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, now what they mean is you can't translate it into a single word in right. English. You have to be verbose about it. And what do we say about inventing words for the purpose of making things less verbose, right? right? So rock bottom, I would say, like nobody who argues that language, that the signifier has no connection with the signified, goes to a hospital where they're supposed to have their right leg amputated below the knee and comes out with both their arms amputated at the shoulder and doesn't sue over this, right? So come on, give me a break. When they start doing that, I'll start to respect their position, right?
So what happens when we get careless about language? Can we unthink grammar?
Can we unthink grammar? Well, I ran a little experiment in ChatGPT, and I told it to write me some word salad. Now, word salad is when you unthink grammar. Okay,
sure.
they just don't. But the thing is, if you try to produce word salad, it's almost like you can't. You have to memorize a word salad script,
mm-hmm.
and then just act like you're making it up. Okay, and of course it's going to give out pretty soon, right? And this is partly, you know, we have discovered is partly because when you're a baby, you've got some kind of linguistic apparatus in your brain. Analogous to, not fully analogous to, but analogous to the way, at least you used to have to like format a disk before you could use it
mm-hmm.
on a computer. You know, so the formatting would give it the little baskets into which to put data so the data could then be looked up again. Oh, it's in basket number 4 or basket number 20 or whatever, right? And so your brain is fully structured with that. And only if it's damaged in some way, does that structure break down and then the words start to collide together. Well, of course, ChatGPT couldn't produce word salad because it's literally programmed to look for the next statistically likely word to
mm-hmm.
be uttered or printed, right? So I suspected it couldn't, but I just wanted to see if it couldn't, right? So in a way, we can't get careless. I mean, in a way, okay. But, you know, a couple of big ones. Now, this is more semantic, perhaps, than syntactic, but one of the big things that my students do between paragraphs is the segue to the next paragraph will be either the word and or a synonym of and. Moreover, furthermore, also, whatever. And, of course, what does that do? It just concatenates ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So E and M and C. Okay, Einstein, I think you're getting somewhere, but you come back to me with something better, right? And so you need the logical relationship,
mm-hmm.
right? And you need the squaring and all that stuff, right? And so that's one way in which we are all, by the way, sort of careless at first. Our ideas are kind of a hurricane. I don't care if you're a guy or not, okay? I'm serious about this. Everybody's ideas, if they're new ideas, let's say, okay, if they're not just rote, memorized ideas, but if they're new ideas, they're always in a bit of a hurricane, and they're always easier to string together with, oh, I thought this, and then I thought this, and then I thought that. Okay, get them out there. Externalize them. But then you have to add those relationships,
sure.
which are expressed by various forms of grammar and syntax and other semantic fields than just and. So that would be one example. There are dozens of examples, of course, of being careless, being more verbose than one need be. It makes it harder for the other person to pick up what you intend.
Right. Talking with Dr. Pat Bart about the history of the English language. Who is Sir William Jones? What are his insights into the relationship among the Indo-European languages?
Okay, Sir William Jones, complete genius. I'm so jealous. He was a Welshman, well-educated Welsh, very well-educated Welshman. Became a lawyer, a jurist, so a lawyer in the very broad sense, too. He studied laws. And he also was really fascinated by languages. I mean, he had learned classical Latin and Greek, because everybody did back
mm-hmm.
then. He learned Welsh, and then he studied Persian and Hebrew and Arabic. And so he had early in life a sort of overview of these languages, some of which are related to one another and some of which are not. So Hebrew and Arabic are related, but they're not related to English, even though English has vocabulary from each of them. Actually, in astronomy, there's a lot of Arabic, actually. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's a lot of Hebrew from the Bible, right? Amen and words like that. But in studying all of those, he then was sent to India to be a jurist and to sort of manage the British legal system there. And it was his thought that, you know, these people have an ancient culture. I'm going to study their laws to see how they line up with British laws, the common law, right, tradition. And I'm not going to just impose common law on them. I mean, because they have these laws and, you know, I need to study. So he ended up studying Sanskrit and a number of the local languages that were kind of descended from Sanskrit, if you will, though Sanskrit is kind of an artificially produced language, but it is kind of like the Latin of India in a way, a little different, but still we could call it that. And he suddenly realized that German was related not only to English, which it just so clearly is. You don't need to be a genius to notice that, but it's related to Persian. Like, how can that be? And it's related to Hindi. How can that be? That's crazy. Okay, so he has been credited with like sort of being the first person to notice that. Well, he's not the first person to notice that that certain Indo-European languages are related to one another, but he is certainly the one who really pushed it as an overall theory and swept in huge numbers of other languages, right, than had been recognized. So that's who he is. He was a member of the Royal Society, and then he was a founding member of the Asiatic Society, which still exists today, that then began to really concertedly study these commonalities amongst the Indo-European languages.
That's Dr. Pat Bart from Hillsdale's English Department. We will continue with more soon on the history of the English language. That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Congressman Mike Waltz from Florida, his brand new book, Hard Truths, Think and Lead Like a Green Beret, and Dr. Patricia Bart from Hillsdale's English Department. The Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is recorded at the studios of WRFH, the student-run radio station at Hillsdale College. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, Mike Latoff. I am a husband, father, four, and veteran who has lived in Reading for over 30 years. I see Reading as a home that will thrive and be a city where everyone feels safe and has the chance to prosper. But I want to make sure we do it responsibly and respectfully to the communities who call this place home. As your Reading City Councilman, I pledge to prioritize keeping businesses safe, stabilizing our homeless crisis, and listening to your ideas about how Reading should grow and prosper. Big ideas are great, but they shouldn't be rushed. When I'm elected, I will work with all of you to make sure that we take each step together.
Ad paid for by Latoff or City Council.
Reading businesses, listen up. Black Bear Diner is now offering catering for events, meetings, and gatherings. Fuel your team with our delicious homestyle meals that everyone will love. Ready to make your next event a hit? Visit blackbeardiner.com for more information and place your order. Black Bear Diner, your go-to for great food and good times.
Black Bear Diner.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Auto Body. You've been in an accident with your vehicle. You call your insurance. The first thing they do is tell you where to go to get an estimate and repairs. Well, tell them where to go and come see us at Coachmaster. They're sending you to their discount repair shop to get the cheapest repair possible. This is not in your best interest. You have the right to choose Coachmaster to do your repairs. All we need is your claim number and we can handle the entire process. At Coachmaster, we don't repair your vehicle for the insurance company. We repair it for you. We use quality parts and products to ensure the highest quality repairs. Your vehicle will be returned to a pre-loss condition. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Coachmaster Collision Repair continues to be the leader in the North State for advanced technology in the collision repair industry. Remember Coachmaster on East Side Road. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Ed Robertson inviting you to join us for the next edition of TV Confidential, Saturday morning at 11 on KCNR. Please join us as we welcome backstage and television actor James Suttor. That's TV Confidential, Saturday morning at 11 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR.
This is Carl Bott. Join Linda and me Monday through Friday from 7 to 9 a.m. for Free Fire Radio right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio. We're going to discuss what's happening in our city, county, state, and nation. Join in. Miss a day, miss a lot. Free Fire Radio, Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 a.m.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.